Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70. The number to call in during this live broadcast is 1-800-858-6582. If you have unlimited long distance or are calling from a cell phone, please use our toll number, 1-559-733-5161. That's 1-559-733-5161. Thank you.
Back with the broadcast, and it's the second hour, and certainly I don't think Aaron's here to answer the phone, listener, so if you were trying to call, and I know Tim would have been, and I'm sure he's got an email waiting for me too, but I'm stuck in this, and first of all, let me finish this. In other words, November 26, 2001, from the State Department, U.S. Supreme Court rejects legal challenge to NAFTA. Yeah, well, the courts, they work with the U.N. system. The Barre Treaty of 1947 tells us that. Look it up for yourself. Do a search on Barre Treaty of 1947. See what you come up with. Information is so easy to obtain today, and people don't pay attention because they're captivated with whatever's on the telly. Oh, buddies. Let's see. This also states the judge also ruled that even assuming NAFTA constitutes a full-fledged treaty, the treaty clause of the U.S. Constitution is not the only means of enacting international commercial agreements. He cited Congress's powers to regulate foreign commerce and the president's authority to manage the country's foreign affairs. The court thus held that NAFTA's passage in 1993 by simple majorities of both houses in Congress was constitutionally sound. boy. The USWA, United Steelworkers of America, appealed the decision, but a U.S. appeals court dismissed the lawsuit, ruling that the case presented a political question that could not be decided by the judiciary. Quote, the question of just what constitutes a treaty requiring Senate ratification presents a unjustifiable political question, end quote, the court said. What is this word? Non-justiciable. What is that? Non-justiciable. What in the world? Look it up in the dictionary. Well, you can't even call in and let us know. And I sure don't have time to do it, but I sure will after the show. Try and get it back to you next week. The Steelworkers Union then appealed to the Supreme Court, arguing the ruling improperly restricted the authority of the federal courts to interpret and enforce constitutional provisions. Yeah, well, we're under the UN treaty, people. We're under international law today. And that is the problem. The Bush administration said the lower court ruling was correct and did not warrant Supreme Court review. Quote, particularly given that there is no dispute between the executive and legislative branches regarding the procedures used to approve NAFTA. Judicial restraint is appropriate, end quote. Government lawyers said in a brief. The Supreme Court's refusal to hear the case came without comment or dissent. Well, that's a nice piece of information saved, dated November 21st, 2001. Very relevant to today. and the FTAA and the expansion of NAFTA. So let's go back to this that we were covering, number five. According to this source, rbnlive.com/news.html. That's rbnlive.com/news.html. U.S. military deaths in Iraq passed 1,000. U.S. military deaths in Iraq campaign passed the 1,000 milestone Tuesday. And I said that Tuesday. Tuesday night I said we had over 1,000. I didn't even research it, listeners. I just knew that that was the case. Premonition told me so. With more than 800 of them during the stubborn insurgency that flared after the Americans brought down Saddam Hussein and President Bush declared major combat over. Yeah. But you better vote for Bush, because if you get Kerry, it's all over. Sorry to say it. I'm just too understanding of what's going on. The report, Bush short on ground duty. The Boston Globe charged Bush failed to sign up with a National Guard unit in the Boston area when he moved from Houston in 1973 to attend Harvard Business School. The Globe also said records indicate Bush failed to meet service requirements for a six-month period in 1972 and a three-month period in 1973. Well, what else are you going to do when you have the ability to shy away from these directions? But listeners, we were involved in 1972 in Vietnam. And that was a set-up war. Korea was a set-up war. All bets are off, people. I don't blame Bush for avoiding the Vietnam War. Kerry avoided it when he was in it. And I don't blame him for doing what he did. I'm sorry. But the war was run by Washington, D.C. and New York City. People in Washington, D.C., people in New York City, the generals, the commanders had no chance of winning that war because their hands were tied. They had to get permission from Washington, D.C. to do whatever they wanted. And in many occasions, when they got permission, the enemy was waiting for them. So, you know, why deal with that, Bush's past, when he's just the offspring of a Bush family that's been in the play for a long time? And we've had presidents since long before we were born that implement the UN agenda. Let's see. War games were cover for the... let's see. Where are we on this now? War games were cover for the operational execution of 9/11. For almost 3 years since 9/11, independent researchers have stockpiled individual smoking guns, which prove that the official version of events was not only a lie, but operationally impossible. And we have that in there, and the 9/11 Commission report is going to be moved to the Hegelian dialectic section as soon as Darren has the ability and time to do so, which is on the website now as you scroll down. We're going to get all that condensed into different areas, all that from different dates, condensed into different categories, so you can peruse a little better. U.S. deficits may reach $2.3 trillion. More of tax... Okay. More of tax cuts renewed. More if tax cuts renewed. U.S. budget deficits will total $2.3 trillion over the next decade and maybe almost double that if tax cuts are renewed, as President George Walker Bush has requested, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Inquired in 9/11 Saudi ties blocked by Bush and FBI to 2 of September 11, 2001, hijackers had a support network of the United States that included agents of the Saudi government. And the Bush administration and FBI blocked a congressional investigation into that relationship. And friend Bob Graham was on CNN today talking about his new book, and this is mentioned about that too. I say, scram, Graham. Here we see confiscation of registered guns begins in Illinois. I don't know what to say about this. You have to research it for yourself. The Chicago Police Department and the Illinois State Police have teamed up to make good on Mayor Daley's pledge that if it were up to him, nobody would have a gun. Does it say any more about this? No, it doesn't. The mother of all scandals, once again, Israel, has been caught with spies at the highest levels of the U.S. government. Once again, Israel denies wrongdoing or faced with incontrovertible evidence. In this case, one of the spies has reportedly operated with the FBI. And once again, Israel denies wrongdoing or faced with incontrovertible evidence, dismisses the spying with the claim that such spying is harmless because Israel and the United States are good, such good friends. Russian school siege bears hallmarks of potential stage psyop. The murky events of the school siege, in which hundreds of children were killed, are raising disturbing questions as to which entities were actually behind the coordination of the attack. Subsequent developments will bring a clearer picture, but many indicators point to this event being a stage psyop. And today on the news, as I watch the news today, for you I watch the news, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani made a statement today. He said the latest Russian terrorism incident will bring our countries closer together. That's the point, listeners. That's what I said last week or Tuesday. That's going to help us feel that everything's cozy for Russia and America. The ultimate goal of the Ford Foundation, according to Rowan Gaither, is to merge our country with Russia. Well, let's finish this off. An attack on the U.S. Embassy. Bush and Kerry ought to be debating how to pull 150,000 U.S. troops out of two stalemated wars costing $6.5 billion U.S. dollars a month. A recent Spanish congressional report estimates that had Bush not invaded Iraq, oil would now be around $30 a barrel instead of $43. Americans have yet to understand the full cost of the president's foreign misadventures, and certainly we never had to worry about oil in the Middle East if we got our oil from this country and up in Alaska, and we could do that. All this is unsubstantiated information. I'm just telling you the direction where it came from, and you research it for yourself. Here we see Rothschild targets Putin with Bush-Cheney. The Rothschilds temporarily have lost control of both Russia and the United States. In the case of Russia, RIFAT, R-I-F-A-T, says recent Chechen terrorist attacks on two airlines and a school were designed to punish and undermine Vladimir Putin for his interference with Rothschild's oil giant Yukos. RIFAT, R-I-F-A-T, says the British government and MI6 are under Rothschild control in financing Chechen resistance. He predicts Putin will be assassinated within 2 years. In the USA, Dick Cheney and the Joint Chiefs are behind U.S. defiance of the Rothschild agenda. I don't know what to say about this. I'm just letting you know about it. This explains the investigation of Ahmed Chalabi and Pentagon analyst Larry Franklin for passing secrets to Iran and Israel, respectively. And the last section of this section is Camps for Citizens, Ashcroft's Health Vision. Attorney General John Ashcroft announced desire for camps for U.S. citizens he deems to be enemy combatants has moved him from merely being a political embarrassment to being a constitutional menace. Ashcroft's plan, disclosed last week but little publicized, would allow him to order the indefinite incarceration of U.S. citizens and similarly strip them of their constitutional rights and access to the courts by declaring them enemy combatants. We need more information on that, don't we? Ah, boy. Well, that's the most I can give you on it. And that's quite a bit. I mean, there's just so much going on, people. So much information. I hope you took notes, and I hope you got the websites down, and I hope you paid attention. I hope you'll do something to the positive, to making a difference, as things are being engineered the way they are, out of our control. That is a bad thing, people. That is a sad, sad situation. But it's no different than it's been for all these years anyway. Things haven't changed that much. It's been declared in 1954 that the United Nations Charter is the supreme law of the land. I have that documentation from the Congressional Record nearby. I just can't grab it now. The Barr Treaty of 1947. The General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade in 1947, the GATT, formed then. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, 1948, December 10th. Eleanor Roosevelt was the author of that, and that's very, very important to remember, because today, this is the reasoning why the migration is happening the way it is, why they're going to get the Social Security benefits, because of President Clinton's Executive Order 13107, Implementation of Human Rights Treaties. December 10th, 1998, forcing government agencies to cooperate with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which includes various other avenues. But certainly, the migration into this country is under that direction. That's why local police can't ask if you're legal or not when they pull you over and stop you. That's certainly the way it is. Sad, sad commentary for our country. So sad, people. Okay, so the people tried to call in, and then the phone's off the hook. So what can I say? That is the way it is. Well, coming from a fellow named Randy, and this guy, this is dated May 28th, 2003, from the ElginCourier.com. Where is this going to go? This will bring us back to where we started out the broadcast, I believe. Yes. Recently, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, in Washington, D.C., announced a settlement agreement with Alcoa Incorporated regarding alleged violations of the Federal Clean Air Act in Milam County. The proposed agreement will require Alcoa to fund $2.5 million in environmental mitigation projects. Once again, the proposed agreement will require Alcoa to fund $2.5 million in environmental mitigation projects. $1.75 million is specifically earmarked to buy land and or conservation easements in Bastrop and Lee counties for the Houston Toad. There it is. I am one of but many county commissioners who will be tasked with the responsibility for taxpayers in the near future of helping our county come into compliance with air quality standards when EPA declares our area in violation of ozone standards. Yet our input was not obtained as to what are appropriate air quality mitigation projects. Oh boy, It continues, I am shocked that EPA or anyone else would suggest that buying land for a toad would serve to reduce harmful emissions into the air and thereby improve air quality. See, this is the insanity of all this. This is why we need to increase our numbers about Agenda 21. It's called LA 21, which is local Agenda 21, but in America it's called Communities 21, part of Agenda 21. Plain and simple. EPA has policies that require that there be a connection between the violation and the mitigation, as well as input of local elected officials. These policies are in place in order to ensure that the mitigation is appropriate. However, neither EPA nor Environmental Defense have tried to obtain the input of local elected officials. Well, I applaud your efforts and the other provisions of the settlement. This provision lacks merit and clearly ignores good science. The proposal to buy land for a toad in order to improve air quality lacks scientific credibility. Thus, I have formally submitted comments on the proposed settlement agreement and urge EPA and the U.S. Department of Justice to consider other mitigation projects that will directly reduce emissions in our area or consider adding or aiding individuals directly through asthma screening or other similar measures. If EPA or groups like Environmental Defense claim to represent the best interest of the general public, then the responsibility that comes with that claim is to seek adequate input from a broader spectrum of the community regarding the community's priorities. Children and the quality of air they breathe are usually a priority over toads. This is signed by Clara, and she's a Bastrop County Commissioner, Precinct Number 2. Well, that's pretty good. And what does Tim say again here in this one? More on the Uyghur Knobs land grab, on the subject of where the money came from and how it is being spent. Here's an interesting letter to the editor from my commissioner, Clara Beckett, relating to how environmentalists, with the aid of EPA, settled a lawsuit against Alcoa for air pollution. Instead of spending the money to abate problems caused by air pollution, the environmentalists are spreading the money to buy land to set aside for the Houston toad. This is a set-up deal. The environmentalists decided how to spend the money awarded for air pollution in Bastrop County without even asking the county commissioners who were elected to represent us. And actually, this was to Tim from Randy. And thank you for sending it along, Tim, as we just covered that. This is all important, people. The way things are being engineered on us and at us and to us is so draconian, so subtle, and these public-private partnerships are so in your face, but you don't know what's happening to you. And that is the problem. Okay, now, Randy sent this to me, too. Thank you very much. We covered it, and that is good. We got the point, and this is the point. If it's happening in Tim's backyard, it's certainly happening in Alex Jones's backyard. They've got Agenda 21 or Communities 21 rolling along in Austin, Texas, listeners. It's not my responsibility to tell Alex. You have to call him and tell him on his show. Do they screen calls over there at my old network, which I was on before it was their network, which he occupies my airtime at night? It's a replay at night, prime time replay. Can't even call in at night. You have to call Alex Jones and tell him about what's happening in Austin, Texas with Agenda 21. He has the big listenership now. That is your responsibility. I can't do this all by myself here. There's no shortwave. Nobody listening hardly anywhere anyway. Everybody's paying attention to the opening night of NFL season. But the point is, all this is being generated and engineered, Agenda 21, while everything else is going on, and the press doesn't say one word about it. That tells you a lot. These are the facts, and this is the situation we've got. Where's it going to stop? We've got a third hurricane called Ivan approaching Florida now. Now, how can this be going on? And it was publicized in the press today that this is going to be an ongoing situation in Florida. Florida is becoming a magnet for hurricanes. What are they doing but trying to declare it their World Heritage Sites and implement their smart growth communities? Well, isn't that ironic? Doesn't that fit? In California, they burn you out, and the insurance companies won't let you rebuild in the land you once lived on. So you have to relocate after the fire, and you can check out the fires in California by going to the Global Fire Monitoring Center. It's all there. Understanding this is very important. It could be Russia's weather modification program is implementing this. It could be. I don't know. We aren't privy to this information. But realizing it is everyone's responsibility, that it is a fact that it can happen that way. I'm just at a loss sometimes at how this is all being engineered and how it's so easy it is to connect the UN dot to all this that I've been harping on all these years. And are we having an effect? I hope so. Because we've got to get to the bottom of this. Dennis Kucinich is a real piece of work. He introduced, you know, we were talking about this, these popular science articles about the nuclear spacecraft that can fly 350 miles in space and stay in space for a long time, and the artificial, let me just grab them here. When UFOs arrive, what will you do? Remember that? The U.S. government already has a multi-million-dollar top secret plan ready to go. And then the other article, this one was from February 2004 this year, and the other one was December 2000, Air Force's nuclear flying saucer. We covered that this week to a certain extent. Well, he has, Kucinich, H.R. 3616, Space Preservation Act of 2002. We'll get into this on the other side. Oh, where are we going from here, people? One step after another.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Does the Bible show us the Earth from space? That's next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moment's host, Ian Taylor.
The Earth floats in space, attached to nothing, surrounded by a thin layer of air. What science has only just learned, the Bible has taught for thousands of years. Yes, while other ancients pictured the world as flat, or resting upon giant turtles or some other animal, God told the Jews in Job chapter 26 and verse 7 that he hangs the earth on nothing. Genesis chapter 1 and verses 6 and 7, we read that God created a firmament. In recent times, some have said that this word proves that the Bible is based on ancient myths. New discoveries, however, are challenging these dates about the Bible. The word translated firmament comes from the Hebrew word rachia, and in these verses, the Hebrew root word which refers to the process of making a statue. In making a statue, the ancient artisan would take a soft metal, like gold, and begin to pound thin sheets of it carefully onto a wooden form of the statue until the wood was completely covered by a thin, form-fitted layer of gold. The use of this word translated firmament puzzled many people until the Earth was first viewed from space. Then we saw it, the Earth suspended on nothing in space, surrounded by a thin, form-fitted layer, our atmosphere. So the Bible tells the truth in all the subjects that it mentions, but no matter how long science studies, it cannot learn about God's love to us in Jesus Christ. This is revealed to us only by the Bible.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to FirstAmendmentRadio.com on the Internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Forgot where I left off. Oh yes. Space Preservation Act of 2002. What is the status of H.R. 3616? And what you need to do is punch in Space Preservation Act of 2000, or actually Space Preservation Act. And to preserve the cooperative peaceful uses of space for the benefit of all humankind by prohibiting the basing of weapons in space and the use of weapons to destroy or damage objects in space that are in orbit and for other purposes. What is the status on that? It's been reintroduced in a different number, more than likely. And what do we have out there in the way of space-based weapons? Who knows? I've covered a lot of information about that this week. And so I thought you should have this, H.R. 3616, dated January 23rd, 2002. Very, very interesting. to do that research. Let's see. Here we see dated January 18, 2002. Secretary General appoints Executive Secretary of United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. The Secretary General has appointed Jake Waller Hunter of the Netherlands as Executive Secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change to succeed Michael Zamat Kachajar, who retires on 31 January 2002. The appointment has been made after consultations with the Conference of Parties through its bureau. Ms. Waller-Hunter is currently the Environment Director of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD. She has previously worked as the Director of the United Nations Division for Sustainable Development, which provides the substantive secretariat support to the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development. She's also worked with the Dutch government in the early years of her career. Ms. Waller-Hunter, people. Ain't that something? Here we see Section 285 of Title 22 of the U.S. Code. And let's get into this a little bit, as we're have a little bit of time left. It's the Section 285 is the acceptance of membership by the United States in Asian Development Bank. The President is hereby authorized to accept membership for the United States in the Asian Development Bank, hereafter referred to as the bank, provided for by the agreement establishing the bank, hereafter referred to as the agreement deposited in the archives of the United Nations. See how it's expanded. Now you look, you go look at that yourself, Section 285 of Title 22. 285A, it is entitled Appointment of Governor, Alternate Governor, and Director, and Compensation. The President, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint a governor of the bank, an alternate for the governor, and a director of the bank. Now, here it is again, people. You can see this for yourself. You can see this for yourselves. Go to Section 285A of Title 22. No person shall be entitled to receive any salary or other compensation from the United States for services as a governor or alternate governor. The director may, in the discretion of the President, receive such compensation, allowances, and other benefits as, together with those received by him from the bank, will equal those authorized for a chief of mission under the Foreign Service Act of 1980. Just like the Secretary of Treasury, which I covered again today on the shortwave broadcast of WBCQ, regarding the Secretary of the Treasury. He's the governor, the U.S. governor of the fund, the International Monetary Fund. He's the U.S. governor of the bank, International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, which is the World Bank. He's the U.S. governor of the World Bank, and he receives no compensation from the United States, just as the governor of the Asian Development Bank, which was created, when was this created? I don't see a date here. I don't see a date here when this happened. But anyway, this governor of the Asian Development Bank receives no compensation from the United States. Look it up for yourself. 285A, Section 285A of Title 22. Title 22, 285D, Section 285D. This is entitled Federal Reserve Banks as Depositories. Any Federal Reserve Bank which is requested to do so by the bank shall act as its depository or as its fiscal agent. The Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System shall supervise and direct the carrying out of these functions by the Federal Reserve Banks. See how all this is interconnected? I hope so. Here we see of Title 22, Section 285E, Authorization of Appropriations, Income Covered into Treasury. There's hereby authorized to be appropriated without fiscal year limitation for the purchase of 20,000 shares of capital stock of the bank. Any payment made by the United States by the bank, any payment made to the United States by the bank as a distribution of net income shall be covered into the Treasury as a miscellaneous receipt. Interesting. And let's get into this again, as it's very easy for you to find. I'm telling you where to go. I'm holding your hand. I'm telling you where to go. Title 22, Section 286, Acceptance of Membership by United States in International Monetary Fund. The President is hereby authorized to accept membership for the United States in the International Monetary Fund, hereafter referred to as the Fund, and in the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, hereafter referred to as the Bank. Provided for by the Articles of Agreement of the Fund and the Articles of Agreement of the Bank, as set forth in the final act of the United Nations Monetary and Financial Conference dated July 22, 1944, and deposited in the archives of the Department of State. The State Department, people. There you have it. Title 22, Section 286A, under the title of Appointments. Governors and Executive Directors, Term of Office, the President, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint a Governor of the Fund, who shall also serve as a Governor of the Bank, and an Executive Director of the Fund, and an Executive Director of the Bank. The Executive Directors so appointed shall also serve as Provisional Executive Directors of the Fund and the Bank, for the purposes of the respective articles of agreement. The term of office for the governor of the fund and the bank shall be 5 years. The term of office for the executive director shall be 2 years, but the executive director shall remain in office until their successors have been appointed. That's a pretty lackluster direction. We go down to... We're going to skip B, the alternate's term of office, but we're going to go to C, governor to serve as counselor, alternates, and associates. Should the provision of Schedule D of the Articles of Agreement of the Fund apply, the governor of the fund shall also serve as counselor, shall designate an alternate for the counselor, and may designate associates. D, compensation for services. What is this going to say, listeners? 1. No person shall be entitled to receive any salary or other compensation from the United States for services as a governor, executive director, counselor, alternate, or associate. Now, look, listeners, it's very easy for you to find. The U.S. Code's on the other links in our website. Section 286A is under the heading of appointments. You can see this for yourself, print it out, send it to everybody you can, get them to understand that we're part of this international community whether we like it or not. We're part of the UN system whether we like it or not. We're set up into this whether we like it or not. How can we get out of it? That's the question I ask. Number 2. The United States Executive Director of the Fund shall not be compensated by the Fund at a rate in excess of the rate provided for an individual occupying a position at level Roman numeral 4 of the executive schedule under Section 5315 of Title 5. That's Section 5315 of Title 5. The United States Alternate Executive Director of the Fund shall not be compensated by the Fund at a rate in excess of the rate provided for an individual occupying position at level 5 of the executive schedule under Section 5316 of Title 5. That's a mouthful and a half. So the IMF is funding the governors. The International Monetary Fund is funding the governors, which is the Secretary of the Treasury. and the governor of the Asian Development Bank and the World Bank, of which the Secretary of the Treasury is as well. Number three, the Secretary of the Treasury shall instruct the United States Executive Director of the Fund to present to the Fund's Executive Board a comprehensive set of proposals consistent with maintaining high levels of competence of Fund personnel and consistent with the Articles of Agreement, with the objective of assuring that salaries and other compensation accorded Fund employees do not exceed those received by persons filling similar levels of responsibility within national government service or private industry. The Secretary shall report these proposals together with any measures adopted by the Fund's Executive Board of the Congress prior to February 1, 1979. Title 22, Section 286E-11, entitled Assistance by the Fund to Any Country Harboring International Terrorists. Boy, I got a little bit of that Houston toad in my throat, and that's what happens on occasion. So what are we dealing with here? Assistance by the Fund to any country harboring international terrorists. Oh, my. And this is Section 286E-11 of Title 22, listeners. Pay attention. Look it up for yourself. Don't let me be the one to give it to you. You get it and give it to others. Secretary of the Treasury shall instruct the Executive Director of the United States to the International Monetary Fund to work in opposition to any extension of financial or technical assistance by the Supplemental Financing Facility or by any other agency or facility of such fund or any country the government of which, one, permits entry into the territory of such country to any person who has committed an act of international terrorism, including any act of aircraft hijacking or otherwise supports, encourages, or harbors such person, or two, fails to take appropriate measures to prevent any such person from committing any such act outside the territory of such country. Pretty normal. The IMF, people. The IMF is in control. IMF in control in America. Bottom line. Title 22 says it. Let's go to Section 286E-3, entitled Transfers to Stabilization Fund to Purchase of Currencies or Gold from International Monetary Fund, Administration, Utilization of Fund Resources for Repayments. Huh. The title is almost as long as the description. Any purchases of currencies or gold by the United States from the International Monetary Fund may be transferred to and administered by the fund established by Section 5302 of Title 31 for use in accordance with the provisions of that section. The Secretary of the Treasury is authorized to utilize the resources of that fund for the purpose of any repayments in a connection with such transactions. The U.S. Treasury is part of the IMF, people. That is the bottom line of the whole situation. Title 22, Section 287D-1. Non-combatant assistance to United Nations is the title of this from the U.S. Code, Title 22, Section 287D-1. A, armed forces, details, supplies and equipment, obligation of funds, procurement and replacement of requested items. Notwithstanding the provisions of any other law, the President, upon the request by the United Nations for cooperative action, and to the extent that he finds that it is consistent with the national interest to comply with such request, may authorize, in support of such activities of the United Nations, as are specifically directed to the peaceful settlement of disputes and not involving the employment of armed forces contemplated by Chapter 7 of the United Nations Charter. Did you hear what that said? Oh! That was A. Let's go to number one. The detail to the United Nations, under such terms and conditions as the President shall determine, of personnel of the armed forces of the United States to serve as observers, guards, or in any non-combatant capacity, but in no event shall more than a total of 1,000 of such personnel be so detailed at any one time, provided that while so detailed, such personnel should be considered for all purposes as acting in the line of duty, including the receipt of pay and allowances as personnel of the armed forces of the United States, credit for longevity and retirement, and all other prerequisites appertaining to such duty, provided further that upon authorization or approval by the President, such personnel may accept directly from the United Nations. And let's go to A, or any or all of the allowances or prerequisites to which they are entitled under the first provision hereof, and B, extraordinary expenses and prerequisites incident to such detail. Number two, the furnishing of facilities, services, or other assistance, and the loan of agreed fair share of the United States of any supplies and equipment to the United Nations by the Department of Defense under such terms and conditions as the President shall determine. Oh, man. And we may get Kerry, a communist, an outright communist, Kerry, who's just an extension of Clinton. Let's go to number three. The obligation, and you're going to have to look this up for yourself. You can't comprehend what I'm saying, but I'm doing it for the record so you can look it up for yourself anyway. The obligation, let's get back to this last page. Okay, the obligation, insofar as necessary, to carry out the purposes of clauses 1 and 2 of this section, of any funds appropriated to the Department of Defense or any department therein, the procurement of such personnel, supplies, equipment, facilities, services, or other assistance as may be made available in accordance with the request of the United Nations, and the replacement of such items when necessary, where they are furnished from stocks. You know, I wanted to get into Executive Order 12803, which is very, very important, infrastructure privatization. But we may get to it. I doubt it, though. And we go to B now, reimbursement from United Nations, waiver of reimbursement. Whenever personnel or assistance is made available pursuant to the authority contained in subsection A, 1, and 2 of this section, the President shall require reimbursement from the United Nations for the expense thereby incurred by the United States. You got to be kidding. Provided that in exceptional circumstances, or when the President finds it to be in the national interest, he may waive in whole or in part the requirement of such reimbursement. Provided further that when any such reimbursement is made, it shall be credited at the option of the appropriate department of the Department of Defense, either to the appropriation fund or account utilized in incurring the obligation or to an appropriate appropriation fund, or to an appropriate appropriation fund or account currently available for the purposes of which expenditures were made. Is that something to behold? You've got to look this up for yourself. You've got to decipher this and dissect it for yourself. Very important. See additional appropriation authorizations. In addition to the authorization of appropriations by the Department of State contained in Section 287C of this title, it is hereby authorized to be appropriated to the Department of Defense or any department therein such items as may be necessary to reimburse such departments in the event that reimbursement from the United Nations is waived, in whole or in part, pursuant to authority contained in subsection B of this section. Gablah, gablah, gablah. D, disclosure of information. Nothing in this subchapter shall authorize the disclosure of any information or knowledge in any case in which such disclosure is prohibited by any other law of the United States. What a mouthful that is. You've got a lot of work to do, people. Start at Title 22 of the U.S. Code. Start at Section 285 and go from there. Now, as we're about to end the broadcast, Executive Warrant 2803, which happened during the Rodney King riots back in 1992, this dated April 30th, 1992. This is a telling one, people. By the authority vested in me as President of the by the Constitution and laws of the United States of America, and in order to ensure that the United States achieves the most beneficial economic use of its resources, it is hereby ordered as follows. And this is Executive Order 12803, Infrastructure Privatization. Section 1, Definitions. For purposes of this order, A, privatization means the disposition or transfer of an infrastructure asset, such as by sale or by long-term lease, from a state or local government to a private party. That's very important. B, infrastructure asset means any asset financed in whole or in part by the federal government and needed for the functioning of the economy. Examples of such assets include, but are not limited to, roads, tunnels, bridges, electricity supply facilities, mass transit, rail transportation, airports, ports, waterways, water supply facilities, recycling and wastewater treatment facilities, solid waste disposal facilities, housing, schools, prisons, and hospitals. This is quite an executive order, and we're going to cover it in its entirety next week. It is very, very important. It's been going on since 1992. What else happened in 1992, listeners? Agenda 21, the Biodiversity Assessment, 1992. This is so perilously important. To cover your assets by understanding what's being developed for us and on us and at us, and it can certainly be accessed as simply as possible. I don't want to deal with complicated directions on AmericanExpose.com. I'm trying to make it as simple as possible for you to understand how all this is being engineered upon us and at us. AmericanExpose.com. We're going to move the Biometric Consortium right up to the top because that is very critical. We're going to put it in our top group. But plan on, God willing, we're going to cover Executive Order 12803, Infrastructure Privatization, the first thing next Tuesday, and I'm going to make sure that happens and make a note of it. Don't forget Sam and Trish are back. They'll be back tomorrow night in this time slot. Sam and Trish Britton, one of my allies, certainly tremendous researchers, and, you know, they put you to shame, listeners. They can't even see, but they see better than most. What a blessing to have them on our side. Until Tuesday night, pay attention to Melody Cedars from next Monday and Darren Weeks, the webmaster for American Exposé. God bless you all. And pray for the restoration of some sort of this republic. Good night.